Warning! The following episode of Orsini's Uncensored Mind contains explicit language and adult content. The thoughts and opinions stated on this show are reflective of AZ Orsini, the Chief Dave, and their guest exclusively. Seriously, guys, my Dada and Uncle say some pretty crazy stuff. If it offends you, go be butthurt somewhere else.
Just like P. Diddy in a private jet, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to get on the road and get the fuck out of here. We are headed to WrestleMania right around the corner next weekend. Oh, we're going to be in Philly. And when I say we, I don't mean in like the football fan sense. My co-host with me here today, Deceived Dave. Dave, are you with us?
Mm-hmm. We're here.
And I mean that in a literal physical sense, we will be in the house night one, WrestleMania Saturday, in Philly, at the Link, about 25 minutes from your crib. We're going to be traveling down the actual road to WrestleMania. So I want to start this show off by addressing you, Mr. Dave, and asking you right off the bat, for everything that you've seen and everything you've been forced to watch due to being associated with me through blood, how genuinely excited are you for your very first in-person WrestleMania?
It's not only going to be the first, but it's probably going to be one of the fucking greatest for quite some time, dude. There's no better time to be jumping. Everything is just so fucking good. So, yeah, I'm pretty pumped, man. Every time they even got me sold on a Jimmy and Jay, man. I was talking yesterday about it. I'm pumped for that too, dude. I'm excited for everything.
A little oos action taking place. Now,
my eyes on Jimmy, man. That dude is impressing me. Something about his just the way he's just been moving, talking, the little snippets, man. I'm sold, dude.
That charisma.
It's there.
Last
night he had me bugging. He came out. He went to Solo. He came out. They were like at the very beginning. He went to dap up Solo. Solo just kept walking forward. He's like, all right, well,
that's but he's been doing that for weeks now. For some reason, everyone just leaves him hanging every time. It's becoming a whole thing. It's great. The only time he gets dapped, like they dap him back. It seems I've been watching some videos online, so apparently during either the house shows or when the TV show goes off the air, he usually does that with his opponent or someone he's going against. He goes for the dap, and they actually dap him, but then they hit him with their finish. Like, when they do dap him up, it costs him dearly every time it fucking happens. It's amazing. WrestleMania is around the corner, folks. As advertised before, we will go ahead and push that narrative here right now at the very start. April 4th. I believe is the date. Let's double check before I talk out of my ass.
Fourth?
Is it the fourth?
No.
Is it the six? No. I'm talking about our round table.
Oh, gotcha. Sorry,
our
sorry,
WrestleMania yeah. round table. Yes, it is. Thursday, April 4th, 8 p.m. We will be live on Facebook, on Twitter, a bunch of different platforms. I'm playing with StreamYard and getting a bunch of different things. I'll have more specifics when we put the flyer out. We will be advertising pretty heavily pretty much throughout this weekend and through this week that we will be live. Of course, it'll be me. Of course, it'll be my right-hand man, the co-host of this show, main event, Deceive Dave. And then we will have a few more guests, which are TBD at the moment. But as we get closer, obviously, we will be announcing who will be a part of that roundtable. As a side mention, real quick, I mentioned to you guys a few weeks ago that we were going to start opening up different avenues as far as the OUM network, the overall umbrella that will have a bunch of different little spinoff ideas that we've had aside from the podcast. When I originally thought up of OUM Network, I didn't have the podcast in mind to be a part of that, but we brought it back just for shits and giggles. But we've got other things that are going to be a part of that umbrella, and we just released our first episode this past week of the Independent Spotlight, baby. I sat down with ring announcer extraordinaire Mr. Matt DeCourt. If you got a ticket from the city, you have to go to DeCourt's to pay it. That's one of the best fucking lines. Because I was asking, how the fuck do you pronounce it? I don't want to say it wrong. How do you pronounce it? And that's how he explained it. I was like, okay, I'll never forget it now. DeCourt's.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Really cool dude. I love his work. Ring announcer to ring announcer. I just love his work. I love the way he goes about his business. He's a really cool dude. So go ahead and check that out. The format for the Independent Spotlight, real quick, it's very simple. We're not doing the interviews like I did in the past where we would just sit back, ask questions, have a conversation. Although I love conversations with people, they tend to linger and they tend to draw out. And so we had a much more concise formula. We do our interviews for the Independent Spotlight in four stages. Phase one, the prologue. We get to know a little bit about the person when they were younger, before they got in, what spurred them, what motivated them to do what they wanted to do, which leads us into stage number two, a passion revealed. What was it about wrestling that they enjoyed so much? What grabbed them? What gravitated them to the business in the first place? Stage three, those damn pesky dues must be paid. When did your career start? How well is it going so far? What have you been up to? And, of course, stage four, our rafts, our random-as-fuck questions. These questions are out of the fucking blue. These people are not prepared to hear these fucking questions. And as an example of some of the questions that Matt got, I asked him what his favorite color ink was, and it couldn't be black. So he had to pick an ink that he'd like. I wanted to know what of his go-to favorite healthy cereals are. Don't give me your Fruity Pebbles and your Fruit Loops. I want the healthy shit, which is the one that you're digging in the bag to. We also put him in a wrestling pretzel. I had him book. One of the questions was, if you were to take two brother states, North and South Carolina, to a tag team match against North and South Dakota, who are the babies, who are the heels, who goes over, and what's the finish? He had to book based on the personality of the four states involved. That was pretty interesting because we laughed almost all the way through that. And so it ranges. It could be something as simple as tube socks to ankle socks, or it could be wrestling related. It could be anything. It's random. Random as fuck. And I think the most fun about those questions is the fact that they don't know what's coming, and they don't have time to think about it, and we have a clock. They're out of clock. They have to answer it right now. So it's a lot of fun, especially to put these performers on the spot. You guys really enjoy the interview. 60 minutes. That's why we have it in stages. We have a clock that goes throughout each stage, so we're keeping track of the time. Sometimes we may go a little over depending on the conversation, and, you know, we don't want him to lose his train of thought. Same deal. I might have a follow-up question, but it stays to the 60-minute format. We are in. We are out. We're going to wow you with our information, and you get a chance to learn more about these individuals. If you guys have any suggestions out there on who you want to hear from and who you want me to reach out to, please feel free to let me know. Matt DeCourt was a personal choice. I have another person in mind, but if the fans want to hear from a specific somebody, and I do have access to quite a few names and people. So if you really want to, really, really, really want me to stretch these wings out, you let me know and I'll make the phone call. Oh, I don't call people. What am I talking about? I'll send the message. I don't call anybody for no reason. No reason. So that's that. That's the Independent Spotlight. That came out on Wednesday. That'll be our Wednesday series. Obviously, we keep the podcast to about Saturday, maybe Sunday, depending on what we're doing personally. And again, more projects coming down the pike. We've got some more things. I'm waiting for Dave to get off his ass so he can help me with the video game stuff. We got some stuff going on. My wife's doing stuff. My son's doing stuff. It's a family affair down here at the House of Oak. Okay, but we are here today. Sorry about all that. Just wanted to get all that out there for the masses. We are here 1 week, like we just said before. We're about, actually, we're recording now Saturday, so approximately 7 days before what my brother refers to, and very well might be, has the potential at least to be, one of the best WrestleManias in a long time. All hands on deck on Philly. I've already heard some of the staging rumors, some of the stuff that's being designed. I can't wait to physically see it. I think they're going Liberty Bell above the ring and the Rocky steps for the entrance, which would be a really cool visual. They did something like that in New York when they did the Statue of Liberty above the ring, and the entranceway was, I believe it was the Brooklyn Bridge. That was the actual, like, entranceway. So for you here in Philly, I'm currently recording in South Jersey, so I say you guys here in Philly, that's nice representation, I think, of the city. I don't like the big blank stages. They look cool, but I love the custom look of a stage and how that presentation is. So that's where we're headed to in Philly. Two nights, WrestleMania 6th, April 6th, April 7th. And that's going on with WWE. So today's show is going to be pretty much WrestleMania heavy. As my brother pointed out before we went on the air, we may not hit the two-hour mark today because we'd like to save some of our ammunition for the big round table coming up this week. But I feel like this was a better way to split things off because I personally get super excited when it comes to WrestleMania. And round tables in the past, I feel like there's been almost like, what, 3-4 hour shows? Because we do both nights and we're sitting here bullshitting with each other. And then I usually throw in something from something before. It's just a loaded show. So I figure get all my nostalgic bullshit over today so that when we get to the round table, we can just handle business on the live show. So, you still there with me?
I'm
rambling off. Yeah, I'm just rattling shit off. So, today, we're going to be talking about different aspects of WrestleMania. I've mentioned before in the past what WrestleMania does, in fact, mean to me. But considering this is a kind of a new version of the show, and I actually know for a fact we have some people who are listening to the show who are new to it, I'd like to reiterate exactly what level that is on for me. So that's our main event of the evening, what WrestleMania means to me. But we're also going to be talking about great WrestleMania moments. We're talking about some of the great cities that have hosted WrestleMania, because I feel that is an important aspect to the show. And the art of the presentation, which is where we're going to start, because that's what I feel most important part about WrestleMania, because I think WrestleMania for me, not just from when I watch it at home, but going to the events. This is your first WrestleMania, but this is my fourth. And every time I walk into the building, I have an even more visceral reaction to it because there's something about the vibe of the building, right? Like, I think I explained it to you once, like, at an event, like, they have screens, Titantrons or whatever, that they play, but, like, at WrestleMania, I just love the aspect of something, like, as simple as, like, the stadium itself is a video screen. Like, it's all around it, and it's with the lighting, and it all plays its role into the presentation. You know, when it comes to the individual characters, a Randy Orton, or like you just said a second ago, you know, Uso versus Uso. It's twin brothers, but their presentation couldn't be more different from each other. So it's like coming up with this, with the yeet and all this different stuff. And Jimmy's no yeet. No yeet. No yeet. That's bad. Bad is, yeet is bad. So we have the Yeet and the Anti-Yeet matchup taking place here at WrestleMania. You've seen enough WrestleManias by now to know pretty much what I'm describing here. What are some of the aspects that you're looking forward to experiencing yourself, considering it's the first time that you're going to one of these?
I mean, I don't know. It's obviously going to be larger than life, so it's one of those things. Like, for me, when I go to events, any events in particular, it's always like there's like an aura or like a presence where it just everything feels so surreal and loud and just extravagant, and all the energy is great. You're around a bunch of like-minded people who want to see the same shit. So it's just going to be a great time. Gonna go in, gonna Hopefully, you know, my forecast comes true. I get to, if it does, I get to personally experience so many things that, like, if I get one of them, then I think I'm cool for the night. And I'm going to see, I'll probably use two hands on the things of the list that I would like to see that I'm going to get. So,
yeah.
I don't know, just excited to go, be fun to get out. I mean, it's been a long time. I haven't been to an event in, I can't, probably over a decade, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
so that's another aspect. This would be the one to go. This would be the one.
I want to get as many of the what do you expect out of you before we go. Because when we come back, I want to be like, yo, what was – expectation versus reality. You know what I'm saying? Like, now that you now that you went, it's like, oh man, did it live up? Did it not live up? Was it too much? You hit on something right there that I want fans to actually understand as well when you go into this building for, and I know there's people listening to this, they go to all kinds of wrestling events, and whether it be independent or even something as big as like say SummerSlam or Survivor Series or something. Folks, it's not the same. I've been to all those. I've been to the big four. Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, Survivor Series. I've been to the ones in between. I've been to pay-per-view that don't even exist anymore. And I've graduated. I'm in my 40s now. I've been to so many events that has died down a little bit. I'm starting to realize now, I think the only WWE events I've been to in the last couple of years was the WrestleManias. I'm the Undertaker now. I only show up to WrestleMania now. Those are the only ones that I go to.
Only show up for the big ones?
I only show up for the big ones. The ones that, when the lights are on brightest, AJ's in the house. And so one of the things that you mentioned a second ago about being in a room filled with like-minded people, right? I want to touch on that a little bit because you've been to sporting events before in the past. I've been to sporting events. And sometimes you don't get that vibe because –
it depends on where you're sitting.
It's talking. It's also you're also talking about dual fandoms, right? Because it'll be like if it's the Cowboys against the Giants, you got your Cowboy fans, you got your Giants fans, and neither shall the two meet on occasion. You'll walk through the halls and you'll see the occasional boo, right? It's this usual pettiness of the that sucks. Blah, 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 blah. At WrestleMania,
even one further too, you have people who prefer high scoring offensive games.
Yeah.
And you have people who prefer smash mouth football, don't care about the score. They just want to see people get banged up. You got people who love defensive side. So, again, it just like you said, it just depends where the fuck you're sitting, who's around you, and if you get that air, that energy.
Yeah. And with WrestleMania, I think your comment of like-minded people is so spot on because even though everybody has their favorite wrestlers – we're all here for the same goddamn experience. It's like we all, I mean, this building's going to be anywhere from 70 to 80,000 deep next week. And just to be, the way that I always describe it to people is like being the ant that's in the middle of the anthill, just surrounded by a swarm of ants. It's like this big bowl of people you've never met before, you'll never see again, but on this night, we're brothers.
You're experiencing
we're
something.
We're family like, today. Yeah.
Yeah. You're so all creating memories.
Yeah. You walk through the halls to go to the bathroom or to get a snack or maybe even buy a shirt or whatever the case may be. And you're surrounded by people with championship belts and they've got all the merch on. You'll see somebody head to toe, Macho Man with the tassels, or you'll see somebody with the Ric Flair robe. And just walking through the halls, it's like a compilation of fandom between their childhood them and then their adult them.
Yeah, I would imagine very that aspect would be very similar to like a con, like a Comic Con.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Vibe's kind of the same. You've got the cosplaying, especially the. There's always that one guy who goes to WrestleMania with all his belts.
Absolutely,
so he's got the world title, the WWE. He you know he puts on his jewelry. He put on his jewelry. He's got the U.S. title around
Listen,
his waist,
man,
but he's got.
There's only one place in the world you could do that and not look like an asshole. So
the opposite happens. You might be the coolest motherfucker in there because they're like, man, that's easily $1,500 on him right now.
Easy. He's dripping over there.
Easy, about $300-$400 a pop. He's got like five of them. They're like, yo, this dude is bugging. And it'll always be. Sometimes it's not even like it'll be like the Winged Eagle belt. Or the old Intercontinental title belt. You know, like these WrestleMania is the one night where the hardcores and the casuals meet together like Thanksgiving. Yeah, that was. We know how Thanksgiving turned out, but for that one moment, it didn't seem like there was some solidarity, and that's what happened. They got to hate each other the Raw after, but on this one night.
On this night, we can be friends.
Everyone gets together. And I love the art of the presentation as far as, and this is divulging more into the specifics of the presentation, and that is the music. So you had a list in your head of, okay, I definitely want to see this entrance. I definitely want to see that entrance. And then out of the blue, they gave you your top four automatically off rip. Because we don't even know who else is on Saturday. We just know that one is. And that tag match has four of the best entrances in WWE. Right off the rip, right off the bat. So you've got that going for you. And then whatever, is that what you meant when you said everything else is just kind of gravy at that point?
Listen, man, I'll take what I can get. I'm telling, there's a few big ones that are, it's still question mark. Like, I don't know if I'm getting the Bianca entrance yet. So we'll see what happens. I'm not sure if I get the Orton, yet. So like I said, there's a few up in the air, but it's at the, like I said, it's at the point with like the ones that I am getting, it's just like, shut up. You can't stack the card. Like just,
but here's where I think you might actually get both. Because of the tag match being on Saturday, both world title matches are on Sunday. So I don't think it's too out of the realm of possibility to have the two secondary titles on Saturday.
Listen, man, I'm convinced that because they're having their force. See, at this point, there's no question. Like, it's guaranteed to happen. They are forced to put both those title matches on the last night. I think Saturday is going to be fucking stacked.
Because of that, it has to
because of that, it's going to be stacked. That first card, dude, there's going to be so much energy for those people who are there on Saturday. It's going to just be insane, man. I'm very interested on how this card plays out.
Because Saturday is really the first night. It's the first night of WrestleMania. So this is where all the emotion comes out. Even if you've got dual tickets, if you've got both, you're going to be more energetic Saturday than Sunday.
If I'm in charge of the booking here, I don't want this responsibility. Like, this is too much pressure. There is too much pressure here, man. Some of these matches are so big that it's like, ooh, we better start handing out Red Bulls on the entrance, like, for free. Just get everybody fucking jacked.
Which one? See, because you're saying, oh, I would love to see this entrance. I'd love to see that entrance. Every WrestleMania, I think, to some degree, also has an element of the special entrance. So, and I don't mean just live bands, which we have had in the past, which some of the best entrances to me are the live bands. But we've also had special entrances. Like, let's look, as an example, last year, Logan Paul coming down on the suspension wire, right? Flying down into the thing. Seth Rollins coming out with the orchestra and the big puffy whatever the fuck that was.
Yeah, he's gonna be extra.
He's on both nights, so he's gonna be extra.
On the second
extra
night though. No, but see, that's the thing. I think whatever special shit you're gonna get from the champions is gonna be on the second night. I think you're gonna get normal energy on the force.
No, not from Seth.
You think he's going to do something special both nights?
I think he's going to do a yin and yang. I think whatever you see the first night, he'll probably reverse it on the second.
And if there's one person to do it, it's him.
It's
for sure.
Because he's so extra. That's why there's no way he gets a chance to do both nights.
Hell yeah.
And he's not going to just fucking go out of his mind with whatever fucking entrance he's going to fucking
shame
do.
Shame he's hurt, man.
No, he's healthy now.
No, he's not.
They're saying he's cleared.
It's bullshit.
And they're not going to book him to back-to-back nights. I do notice a little bit of a limp.
Listen, if he doesn't drop the title on the first night, then I believe he truly is healthy if he's going both nights.
Yeah.
At least healthy enough to go two nights.
I would agree with that. I'll take that.
So we'll see what happens.
We will see. I love the idea of special. You know, we've got Rhea versus Becky. I could see them doing something. I don't know. Of all the matches that are at WrestleMania, I think you've ninja'd my brain. Bayley and Io. Is anyone talking about Bayley and Io? It's almost like we've forgotten that they're on the card. Even
the- they've been pushing them very hard the past few episodes. But I was saying this literally yesterday, like, dude, this is too late. This is too late. See, like, a great example here would be, like I told you before, because it's kind of, for me anyway, it's coming to, like, fruition a little bit. With the Jimmy and Jay, that could sit. They're pushing it a lot harder now in the past few episodes, but that's okay. I don't think they have enough footage to give me a package right before their match where I'm just gassed. Like, I'm absolutely gassed for those two. So pushing them at the very end here, what they've been doing, which they've been doing beautifully, I'm sold and ready for that. That's okay. I didn't need them from the Rumble till now. Now kick it up because it's about to happen. They did the same exact timeline because I've noticed those two were probably popping up around the same time with the Io Sky title match, and I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm telling my boy, like, dude, they needed to do this right after Rumble. They needed to have this face-off at that press conference that they did in that building. Like, they needed the light to make this match what it's supposed to be. But again, my mentality is this is just like this is definitely a night two match. Oh. That's going to be pretty early to kind of, like, stabilize the energy going into later on into the night. I don't think anyone has buy-in on this. They just want to shift the belt over, and then we'll go from there, to be honest with
you. They're going to do something goofy, like put that match on after the fucking six-pack ladder match. Watch.
Yeah, I mean, you saw what happened last night, right?
I did not. I missed it last night.
Didn't?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I can say it.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell me what happened.
I mean, so they were in the – they were having a match – and who was it? It was Bianca and I'm drawing a blank.
Oh, Naomi. But,
yeah, they had a match. No, they had a match yesterday, and then they ended up all coming out, and Jade Cargill came out.
That I saw. I saw that on YouTube.
Yeah. So that, and you know, they, like I said, they still need to. I'm still convinced that
that's going to be a
six
woman tag. Yeah,
she needs to cook a little bit more, but she looks great, and that they're setting up that That match looks
yeah, because
good too,
she's man. A monster, and they told her stop wrestling. That was it. That's all she needed.
It's powerhouse, and what better way than to put her in a ring with a bunch of tiny women?
Yeah,
just to throw them around, powerbomb them, and just let them eat it. Just great. And that's a part. Listen, you're about to send me on a tangent. This is one of the things right now about wrestling that's absolutely just – that's what's pulling me in. It's not the characters per se. It's either a mixture of the wrestler's delivery and the conscious thought that is being applied to – just even Raw and SmackDown. Like, go back to when The Rock and Cody were facing off that last time, right? When he came in, The Rock fucking walks, does nothing, says, whispers a word, and walks out.
Yeah.
But what got me buzzing was, and I rewound it because I watched this after, I'm trying to see, because I asked my boy, I'm like, you think he actually said something, or do you think he just mumbled some bullshit for the story and left? He goes, I don't know. I couldn't tell. So I rewound it and ran it slow. They did a cut. So he moved his mouth twice and then they cut it. So they like changed the camera angle.
Yeah.
So you literally could not see his mouth move. So you would not be able to tell unless you were in the building. Dude, I exploded when I saw that. The forethought on that, that wasn't an accident. I think they did that shit on purpose. And they do a bunch of these little nuanced things here to drive these stories right now that's getting me pulled in. It's like they have so much invested in the storytelling and not so much the person, like, who's supposed to be showing the story. And it's got me hooked, dude. I'm fucking hooked. Well, I haven't missed a show since Rumble.
Yeah, I know. Me neither, because it's been pulling me in, and it's been a much easier watch leading up to WrestleMania. And I every year I push myself to watch the lead up to WrestleMania just so I'm up to date. This hasn't felt like a push. Like, I'm genuinely excited to be like, all right, what the fuck? What else is going to happen?
I don't know if I just sent you the clip, but my buddy sent me a clip. I don't know if I sent it to you, but it's of when they ended the show last night.
Yeah, I saw
or that.
That
night where Rock was beating his ass and stuff like that. And whatever, right? Like, it was cool to see that.
Yeah.
But the way Rock has been and I said this when we were originally talking about it, when they made the announcement and the Netflix announcement and everything like that. I told you, I was like, dude, this is going to be the end of the PG era once that Netflix hits. Right now, I think it's tapering off. You're seeing a bunch of people starting to take risks, starting to be a little bit more edgy. McIntyre, when CM Punk – oh, don't get me started on that shit. When CM Punk was, like, doing weird shit in the ring, or someone said something. I forget who it was. But McIntyre was like PG or some shit like that, PG era or some shit like that. Nah, that shit is going out the window. And when he sent me that clip, he said a message underneath that said, I can't wait for the death of the PG era on Netflix. And I've never said that to him. He said that on his own. Uh-huh. So we can already seeing it going in that direction with The Rock, who's obviously at the head of the table there, being the forefront and being super aggressive with the shits and the fucks.
Can I comment on that for a second? Because I think it's a beautiful illustration of people needing to understand where their place is in the world, right? So when Rock turned heel initially, right, he was cutting the same promo, and I think he said bitch ass or something like a regular ass cuss or whatever. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, all of a sudden it got out that the locker room seemed upset about the fact that he's able to go out there and cuss. And I said, well, that's not fair. He gets to go out there and he gets to come off as an edgy character. He could use all this language. We're not able to do all that. We have to figure ourselves out within this confines of this box or whatever, but he gets to do whatever he wants. That's unfair.
People were saying that?
Yes. This came out on Twitter. Like people in the locker room were upset that he was getting this exceptional treatment. Like, we're not able to go out there and just let loose like he does, right? After that was made public, every week after that, The Rock has gone on TV and said, fuck, 17 goddamn times. Dave, he cussed once, and they bitched. So he cusses every goddamn sentence now to prove a point.
Well, can I jump in really quick? Because you just made me remember something. Real quick. Because when he was beating Cody's ass, we were watching it, and he said shit, and they didn't catch it.
Yeah.
So we're sitting there like, dude, I can't believe they missed that one, right? We're laughing.
They caught the fucks.
And then
my buddy goes,
yeah, but this is a recording. I go, no, it's not. It's live. He goes, no, you're watching it on Hulu. This is a playback.
Right.
And they still let it go.
Yes.
So when you said that, you just he did that shit on purpose.
Yes.
Then.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. You just triggered that thought in my head, and I wanted to point that out.
The locker room.
He did it on purpose.
Yes. The locker room bitched that he was able to curse. And so he heard that. And he went, bet, watch this. And now he curses every 5 seconds.
And he's letting some of them slide.
Some of them go, like, and some of them get bleeped. And it's so funny because even when Raw went off the air, they were telling him clear. The Rock was like,
fuck all that.
What do you think? Because the camera's not rolling. This is over? This shit ain't over. Fuck all that. And I was like, you started bitching. And what he did was he doubled down and said, abso-fucking-lutely. I can do it. You can't. When you start drawing money, then you can cuss too. I don't know what the thought process is. You guys in the back think that if you were allowed to say ass and fuck, that you'd be more over than you are now?
Oh, okay, hold on. But you just triggered a question for me I want to ask you.
Okay.
Okay? Because, okay, damn, we're about to completely just right off the rails here. Yeah, okay, listen. Okay. So remember back in the day, I know people, like, if you're a wrestler and you listen to this, dude, I know you're fucking triggered. Because I understand it's one of those, like, you have handcuffs things, but the people are telling you not to wear the handcuffs. Okay, so remember when, I forget who exactly he was speaking to, but remember when Stone Cold was having that back and forth with someone and he was trying to tell him, like, you know, you got to create your own moments. Like,
he was talking to Dean Ambrose. But go ahead, yes.
Yes, so you have your rules. Yes. You have your rules. You have this. They were complaining about handcuffs. I can't be who I am. I can't express myself. I'm there, this, and that. And Stone Cold pretty much, or in a roundabout way, was like, boo-hoo. you gotta fucking make it. Like, yeah, you have handcuffs, but you need to know when you can and cannot take it off, right? Now, fast forward to now, we're having this back and forth that you just mentioned that I didn't even know about. And Rock is doing that very same thing. So what do you say to the person that will just say, oh, well, he's the head, so he can do that? But if you rewind, they did this very same thing. I understand in a different era. I get it. But, like, how do you make that sell to them in the moment right now where it seems like they probably have more of an opportunity than ever to take that advice, to change their mindset and go, okay, well, if the boss man is clearly doing something, then I can find a way to do this then. Because I think now's one of the only times in the past decade where, like, you can break out of the chains if you do it correctly.
Okay, well, where's the question?
You see where my head went?
Where's the question? Wait, well, where's the question? What do you say to these
people? So what do you say to the person who Lexan goes, well, that's, remember, a lot of them were saying, like, cool, Stone Cold, that's awesome, but that's bullshit. Like, I can't do that. And then now you fast forward, someone of the same era as him, right?
Uh-huh.
Because I could imagine Austin and those of that era are looking at The Rock right now. It's like, see, guys, that's how you do it. But the guys today will probably be like, yeah, well, he's the boss and he can do whatever the fuck he wants.
Okay, I think I know. Okay, all right.
You understand what I'm trying to say? Yes. Like, what advice do you give to the guys today
advice,
it looks like they can do the same thing,
but
that's, how do you do
and
it?
And I'm going to stop you right there because that's false. They can't do the same thing. And that's,
okay.
And that's the issue. What I would say to people like that, I would tell you, get good. Get your tissues out, cry a little more, and get good. It's not the cussing. It's the person cussing. Okay? Because
– that's fair.
I'll give you an example. If you go to the Attitude Era where everybody was allowed to say whatever it is that came to their head, I'll give you an example. Hardcore Holly will go out there and call someone a bitch ass. Rock in the next segment will go out there and call somebody a bitch ass. One gets a bigger pop than the other. Why do you think that is?
Well, obviously, it's the person.
It's more, one is doing it more charismatically, more entertaining than the other person. Being out there, being able to go out there and use derogatory language, and I don't mean just fuck, shit, ass, whatever, the curse words. I mean going out there and actually delivering aggressive, possibly inappropriate material for the shock value of getting the audience pissed off at you isn't going to work for everybody. Because
fair.
Everybody
it didn't back then either.
No, because there were a lot of guys who could cuss back then and did cuss and did not get over. It's not the cursing. It's the person cussing. It's the reason they're cussing. It's the way they're cussing. And more importantly, how they're cussing at the specific person they're cussing to. The Rock did not need to curse at Taka Michinoku. That was above his pay grade. He did use foul language.
He was punching down.
There you go. He did cuss an awful lot at The Undertaker. You get what I'm saying. There, it's not the kind of promo. It's not the wording of the promo. It's you. You are not the kind of person that's going to deliver the material that's going to transcend into the audience. That's the problem. Because the bullshit excuse, and it's a bullshit excuse, and that's why Steve Austin looked at him like a fucking idiot. Dean Ambrose or John Moxley, his reasoning was is that when you step outside of their box, they reprimand you. They punish you. They put you in a position where you can no longer succeed. They bury you, essentially. So everyone just plays the game in fear of repercussions. And the reason why Steve Austin and The Rock and these guys, they hear that excuse and they call bullshit, and it's not really fair to today's talent. But Steve Austin and The Rock were exceptional talents. They could afford to go into the ring and go against the grain and spit in the network's face and not worry about being fired because they were fucking good at what they did. It was easy. They were drawing fucking money. They were putting money in people's pockets. And it's easy to turn a blind eye on someone who's breaking the rules when they're making that much fucking money. If Chad Gable walked into the ring and told Sami Zayn to stop fucking with him, it ain't going to draw the money that those motherfuckers draw. So guess what? You just cursed on TV. You didn't draw any money. You didn't draw any attention. The only thing that you drew was the ire and the anger of the network.
Right.
So, yes, you're in trouble now. Because we told you not to do that. We were in fear of what would happen, and what we feared actually happened. Now, if Chad Gable was to go in the ring and go to Sami Zayn and say, you need to stop fucking with me, and the audience popped, and all of a sudden, Chad's a cool fucking guy, and they buy all the Alpha Academy merch. He's the hottest person. he's getting all the YouTube views. The videos on Peacock are the highest rated shit is his shit. Guess what? He's not getting in trouble. He's getting pushed.
Yeah.
That's the fucking difference.
And do you believe that there's no difference between today and rewind back to that interview time?
I don't think there's any.
It's been the same across the board.
I don't think. I think the rules and regulations have changed a bit since the Attitude Era to now. Mm-hmm. But in all fairness, and I say this with the utmost respect, as the rules and regulations have gotten stricter, the talent has gotten worse. They haven't gotten better. WWE's talent is going down as far as the storytelling, as far as the charisma, as far as engaging the audience. We have better wrestlers now than we had then, but we don't have better characters or stories now than we had then. And one drew more money than the other.
And I think that's why I want to say it so bad, so I'm just going to fucking say it.
Okay.
It's why the whole CM Punk segment pissed me the fuck off. Listen, I've said this before. I am not a Punk guy. I know you guys love the whole nostalgia thing with him and that he has all these cool moments. Get him the fuck out of here, please. He is fucking doing nothing but ruining my experience. Like, the only one dark moment of this whole ride we're taking right now is CM fucking Punk. You want to talk about a waste of goddamn space right now? That fucking promo with McIntyre absolutely pissed me off. Because
curious,
McIntyre gave him... Because McIntyre gave him nothing but fucking gold. And all that idiot said was, come in the ring!
Well,
come in the ring! I'm gonna punch you!
Yeah,
Hold on
a second. First of all, let me give you some insight about that specific promo. That specific segment, I should say, not promo. Because it involved three. It was Punk and Drew, and then it involved Seth. Okay?
Yeah, I know. And Punk ruined both, all of it.
He fucking buried the both of them. Buried them, Punk. And I don't mean he shot a better promo. I'm saying he specifically did small little things within that promo to upset all of the momentum that Seth and Drew have been building up to that point, right? So Drew has legitimately, it's not even a joke.
Are you saying he did this intentionally?
Yes. And I'm saying he did that intentionally because from what I understand.
And I just want to be clear. You agree with this. Like, you like this.
Oh, I loved it. So
you got to fucking explain.
Okay, so here's
extra tilted
now. So here's the thing. Because here's why I loved it. Everyone's been clamoring. They've been yelling at the heavens, bring back the Attitude Era, right? We get a glimpse of it, and no likey, right? So and this is why I loved it, because what happened in that segment, from what I understand, is there wasn't a set script amongst the three in a sense of wording, right? Like, you hit this part, you hit this part, blah, 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 blah. There was an agent involved, I think it was Bobby Roode, who was the agent for that segment, and I think the exact instruction was to go out there and draw some money for WrestleMania. Meaning, I don't give a fuck what you say to each other, just fucking go out there and just do whatever, right? For the most part, because Punk hasn't been there that long, he just came back in November and now he's been injured since January. But Drew and Seth, specifically, are two individuals who really thrive in WWE system because of the scripts, right? They have it laid out. Even if it's not word for word, there's a bullet point. We're going to get here. This is the part we really need to stress. Here's where we're going to get this part over. What happened in this segment is they took three individuals, they put them in the ring, and just said, just talk. And that is the wrong place to put two guys who don't normally do that into the ring with a guy who that's all he ever wants to fucking do. Because Punk took that as an opportunity to be petty as fuck, and they couldn't rival the petty. I'll give you two examples specifically that I knew for a fact was just Punk being a dick, right? The first one was with Drew, when Drew was doing the walk around and he's talking, he winds up at the commentary table. You remember the segment. Mm-hmm. He winds up at the commentary table. He's got his foot up. He's being douchebag Drew, right? He's just doing what he do. And he was doing the whole thing. He starts to take off his hoodie to reveal the shirt, which is what he's been doing. This is the whole deal, being petty Drew. And Punk has seen it on TV 5-6 times in a row. He does this shit all the time. So he undercut Drew right at the reveal. And he goes, you know, not for nothing, but for all the merchandise I've sold, I never had to put another man's name on it to sell them. Right? Which drew an ooh, and Drew had no fucking response, so he kept it moving. Then he gets at the table, and he makes...
That was wrong.
That
sounds cool, but he was wrong.
Whose name has been on CM Punk's shirt besides CM Punk?
They have pictures of something. I punched the Big Show or some shit like that.
What?
The moment he said that shit, it was all over fucking Facebook. All
right.
He came out with a t-shirt that had Big Show's name on it.
I have never seen a CM Punk with Big Show's name on it.
Go ahead. You keep talking. I'm going to find it and send it to you right now. All right.
Yeah. You take that look up. So Drew goes to the fucking... You've been by train of thought. Oh, so Drew goes to the table. They're going back and forth. And Drew drops the line about being the chosen one, which was the name and gimmick that he had like when he first debuted. What was that, 05 or 04 or something within that realm, like a long, long fucking time ago. He was the chosen one. And it's a reference to the time where when he debuted, Vince McMahon debuted him in the ring and referred to him as the chosen one. And so... In this segment, when Drew says, you know, I was this, I'm going to be dead, I'm going to do that, and it looks like I've always been the chosen one, and Punk immediately, like a fucking sharpshooter, he just goes, you're the chosen one? Who chose you? Who? Say his name. Knowing full well that Drew could not say his fucking name, once again, Drew's on camera with a microphone in front of his face, just smiling. He has no comeback. He's got nothing to say. And every time Punk digged at him, he had no... I think at one point Punk said dipshits, and Drew was like, PG, brother. That was the best he had.
That was the best.
He couldn't keep up. So then the Seth thing, they walked themselves into a problem because CM Punk's not going to be the referee at WrestleMania. At best, I think they landed on doing the commentary, which is where they ended up in this segment. But Seth made a mistake when he opened up the opportunity for the fans to partake. And he was like, what do you think CM Punk should do? And they started chanting referee, which is not the direction he wanted this to go. So Rollins had to think on his feet, right?
Uh-huh, and he did.
And he goes, well, I don't know if you...
Which I'll give him. That was the one part that I thought was good.
He goes, I don't know if you guys can notice, but that's his counting arm right then. And Punk immediately got on the ground and fucking counted to three with his other hand. Petty... cut out the fucking knees from underneath them bullshit. At one point, Seth goes that the two of them, Punk and Drew McIntyre, going back and forth, and Rollins goes, well, if you want to know what I think, and Punk goes, no, I don't. It's just like, this was a masterclass on just being a dick.
That's funny, man.
They couldn't fucking keep up.
We both saw it different, man.
They couldn't. If you're a Seth fan or a Drew fan, I understand why you didn't like that segment, because he did undercut a lot of the shit that they've been doing with success on the show. He shit on all that. So I could see the other side of things where people go, well, I love Drew. I love what Drew's been doing. And he just kind of poo-pooed all over that, basically calling him an internet troll and all this other stuff. And Seth, once again, making a comment about his fucking wife. I could see the other side. The reason why I'm such a fan of Punk is for situations just like this, because it exposes people, right? It's like, you're great in the right setting. I'm great in every fucking setting because I could do this all fucking day. And I love it when he goes against people that cut it just the way that he does. Off the top of the head, it's back and forth. And that's my kind of shit. I love Seth and I love Drew, but they got exposed here. They're not on that level. They can cut a promo. Yeah, they can tell a story.
I don't know, bro.
They're not on that level. That's different.
I don't see it as an exposure. I just see it as him being a fucking idiot. It's two people on the same page. One person
going into business for himself.
But my point is, there's a way to do it. The way not to do it. It's the same thing you said earlier about just saying fuck to say fuck, yeah. Right? He's being a dick just to be a dick. There was no art to it. There was no fucking art to what he did. It was a shock and awe. And like you said, because it's Punk, some people are going to go, oh, look at him. He's being a dick. It's what he does best. They don't know how to put up with that. Yeah, you have two people who are on the same fucking page doing the job the way the job is supposed to fucking be done. And then you get Dickhead, who's been here for 25 years, who's doing shit the old way. And it's just like, yeah, I don't know how to respond to that. And because of that, I don't see it as an exposure. I felt like you're just fucking ruining this. Like you're not doing – first of all, and I'm glad Seth said it multiple – or he said it in there. We're pretty much like, bro – shut the fuck up. You have nothing to do with any of this. You don't get to choose what you're going to do in a match you are not a part of. So you're just here. And this is another thing, too. If this was anywhere else, I'd shoot bail. But because we did this shit in Chicago, I feel like we did it just to put him inside of the fucking ring in Chicago.
Yeah.
And that also pisses me off. I'm fucking sick of that. This was irrelevant. He was being a baboon for no fucking reason. None of it was artistic. None of it was artistic. None of it was Attitude Era. He was just a fucking sore thumb, being a jackass in the middle of the ring. And they're both, I will admit, they both kind of looked a little exposed. But I don't see it as a matter of, like, I don't know how to deal with this. It's just like, you don't know what to do. If I give you a whole playbook on what we're going to do when I say the color blue, and then we get in front of everyone and I say yellow, you don't know what the fuck you're going to – what? We never went over yellow, right? So I have no clue what we're fucking doing. So I don't know. That's the way it
You know what,
though? It drove me absolutely fucking nuts.
You said it a second ago that Seth said it perfectly. You have nothing to do with this. Da, 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 da. Seth, of all the people that were in that segment, Seth is probably the last motherfucker who has anything to say about any of this. And I know he's the world's champion, but Seth doesn't give a fuck about this program because Seth is involved with the Bloodline every week, not Drew. Second, Punk's involvement with this match is because Drew's the one that injured him. Drew's the one that took him out. Drew's the one that's been trolling him this whole time. When he went in the ring, and I'm referring to Punk, to start that promo, he never mentioned Rollins. He only talked about fucking Drew. As a matter of fact, he talked about everybody but Rollins. He talked about Cody. He talked about The Rock. He talked about Drew. He never mentioned Rollins. So for Rollins to say you have nothing to do with this isn't true. As a matter of fact, Drew has been talking more about Punk than he's been talking about Seth. Drew and Seth haven't had a feud leading into their match this weekend. They've done two promos against each other, which didn't make any sense because their promos, again, revolved around Roman fucking Reigns. So what are we talking
about?
Right,
that's the story that
they're combining.
McIntyre's been spinning that he's not paying attention to the match.
Correct. So now that Punk's talking, all of a sudden Rollins wants to take up for the match because Punk said something.
Sure, because it leads and that's fine because it also leads into what McIntyre is saying. You're putting your energy in shit that doesn't matter. That's why.
But Drew's a hypocrite because that's what he's been doing. Look at all of his social media posts. They're all Punk. He hasn't said anything about Seth on Twitter. It's been in the gym talking about injuring Punk. It's in the car trolling the fans with Punk's music. It's going to – when he got to Chicago, he did the video on his social media about going to Mindy's Bakery. Once again, to troll Punk. He hasn't done anything for
Seth. He's been trolling, dude. No, we're not going to sit here and talk and slander McIntyre. No,
no.
No,
he's been great, but he hasn't talked about Seth. That's my point. The two of them banded together to go against Punk because it's their match at WrestleMania. But they didn't each give a shit about their match until just at that point when Punk was cooking them. Now, all of a sudden, Punk's cooking them up. I'm cooking them on TV, and now all of a sudden there's solidarity between the two. Get the fuck out of here. They didn't even have a they haven't promoted each other except for like one time since the he won the Elimination Chamber mid-February. We're 1 week away from WrestleMania, and now all of a sudden it's the world's heavyweight title match. Bitch, you were just talking about the main event of fucking night one like earlier in the fucking program. What?
But dude, this is what I'm talking. That's what I get.
This right, promo would have made.
I get it. Mac, that's why I said McIntyre was giving him fucking gold. You're right. He's been doing nothing but talking shit. This is what's so frustrating, because I felt like this should have been the payout of all of that. And Punk fucked it up.
How? Well, what's the payoff?
Because you just said that all he's been doing this time is been talking about Punk.
Right.
He addressed that. McIntyre addressed that.
Okay,
he
but
said,
what's the payoff?
You have been the fuel that's been pushing me. Every time I look at something I want to succeed, I feel like I'm going to fail, and then I think of you, and it pushes me. That makes all the other bullshit that he's been saying before this relevant. And then Punk just goes, come in here.
Okay, but you're not answering my question. Where is the payoff? If he's going to sit there and say, you've been my motivation this whole time.
It's story-driven. It's what makes it make sense. Okay. Because when you just said it, he's not talking about the title. He's talking about Punk. Right. Oh, it makes sense why he's doing that, because it's what's driving him to be better. He said it there. Okay. It right. makes that he because, like you said, his... it doesn't make sense, but it now it does because okay, it said it. But... And Punk's response was, "Come in the ring."
Right. What
That's
is he
fucking stupid?
You're not answering my question. What is his response supposed to be?
I don't know. I'm not
okay,
a fucking
but that's,
writer.
But that's what
but I'm
saying.
Telling you that you giving me this is shit. That's
no,
all I'm saying.
No
I don't
wrestler,
know what's better.
No wrestler, forget wrestler. No human being on earth. Forget wrestling for a second. If I'm beefing with a guy at my job, not beefing physically, we don't like each other. We're not vibing. And something happens and he breaks my fucking arm. And all he does for the next 2 months is gloat and talk shit and fuck around with people making fun of the fact that he's the one that injured me. And then we get into a room and he goes, "You're my motivation for being better." My reaction of, you know what, I'm sick of hearing this, let's fight right now, is a bad choice?
Yes. In this context, yes.
That's what I'm saying. In this context, if you're saying it's not... Go ahead.
Yeah, this isn't real life. I don't want fucking realism. I don't want you to want to square up.
I don't
up.
Want realism.
No, the only person who can scream on site is LA Knight right now, okay? Everyone else...
Yes, he's allowed at all. He's allowed to yell at all times. I love the way he yells. Did you see the fight with him and AJ at the house?
Yes! That was the...
I want him yelling all the time.
Dude, but that's what... Okay, I'm glad I kind of made a snippet there, because that, to me, is doing the Attitude Era air quotes, and the reason why I'm using that is because literally LA Knight is a embodiment of all of the things Attitude Era, right? And he's doing it so fucking well, and he wants to fight right on site, but he's doing it in like very artistic. He's being big. He's doing things aside from he's saying, "Come here, I want to punch you," but he's doing it in a presentation way. Whereas to me, Punk just said, like you said, like a dude from Chicago, "I want to punch you in the face." Stop. Cool. It's but I'm here to see a story, not you just
okay,
two
but
baboons
it sounds,
fight like that.
It sounds to me like what you wanted was for Punk to get his ass kicked for no reason.
No, I didn't even care about a fight. I wanted to
so
see
some...
So
then I'm
some,
so
like,
confused. What did
I
you want?
I want to see the Punk that everybody keeps talking about.
You did, and you didn't like it. You did, and you didn't like it.
Okay, then my apologies. If this is what people love about Punk, yes. I definitely not
I just explained it to you. He's a petty, he's a petty prick who's a better who's a better on-the-spot talker than fucking everybody else, and that's
then
it.
Then I'm fucking glad I missed it then, because that was fucking terrible.
That's it. You found it terrible. That's fine. There's a fucking 100 million other people who thought it was the greatest shit ever. And to slide over to the LA Knight thing, he's catching a lot of hell too. Because it's easy to be an Attitude nostalgia act when there's no Attitude Era talent around. Ever since The Rock's come back, LA Knight stock's dropped a little bit. Because
he's
imitation rock. And now that we've had the real one for a while, it's starting to remind people, oh, yeah, I forgot. When WrestleMania is over and Rock goes away, LA Knight will be back on top again.
Yeah, and they'll be sucking his dick again.
Yeah,
so,
they'll be sucking his dick again because
of course his stock's going to drop.
Yeah, his stock's going to drop because the real McCoy is in the house now.
Yeah,
you know,
for
He's doing his Rock impression while
that's
Rock
fine.
Is there, so it's not working.
But that's not a negative,
before.
I don't think.
It's not a negative right. I mean, it's a negative right now because it sucks that he's going to be looked at in that fashion during this time period. But once Rock leaves, and there's no more Attitude Era people around, he can start pretending to be an Attitude Era guy again. And then everyone will feel nostalgic again. Although this final boss thing that The Rock's doing right now, it's pretty fucking good.
It's pretty fucking. It's a good. Work of art, man. It's a work
it's
of art.
It's the masterclass on changing.
It's a
shit
work
up.
Of art, man. We watched that man walk out, stand in the ring, say nothing, whisper, walk out, and it wasn't like a shock and awe. It seemed like. As he was doing those things, he had complete control over the crowd. This wasn't an accidental thing. It's almost as if he had like some Wi-Fi connection to the people. Like he was controlling them by doing nothing. How do you compete with that? Just watch.
Oh my God.
See if you can get some of the splash. And then fucking when he leaves, you try to do the same thing.
I just saw the picture you just sent me. People are fucking stupid. He never sold that shirt. That was a fucking gimmick shirt for the storyline. They ended up wearing a mask, too. They didn't sell the fucking mask, either.
It doesn't matter. He put a man on name on his shirt.
No, that does matter, because the sentence was, I never put another man's shirt on my shirt to sell them. He didn't sell this shirt. People are fucking dumb. Oh, my God. No wonder why I couldn't remember that. He wore that shit one fucking week.
It's trash.
Yeah, if you saw what you saw on Monday and didn't like it, then CM Punk's not for you. Because
no, he's
that's
not.
Cause
nope.
That's it, you're also the same person who says he doesn't like Kevin Steen. So that's all mm-hmm. we need to I'm sorry, Kevin Owens. That's all we need to know about you, my guy. We're good. We're straight.
Nah, I'm good. Hey, he's been growing on me though. See, you know what it is with Kevin Owens is that I respect him more that I see that the people around him respect him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like when he had the match with Stone Cold and stuff like that, it's just like, okay, like the stunner thing is one of the things that I hated about him, but he obviously got the blessing, so like I'm good.
Yeah, he hit Steve with it in Dallas.
Yeah, I don't know what you call that. You know what I mean? Like I don't know what type of fan you call that, but like the more that I see that he's respected and like the people actually like fuck with him, I don't know. Like he's growing on me. I don't absolutely hate him, but
kind of neither here nor there about it. It's just like
because to me it's like the Shield, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, all of these people, and I know you obviously remember this stuff. Like at one point, the fans like wanted these people here, right? Like it was all people would be talking about. We'd see T-shirts of these guys at events. Hoping that they would show up or shit like that, right? Like, there was a moment where, like, everyone wanted nothing more than these guys to be here.
Right.
And all you would hear is how amazing they are and that they belong on the biggest stage because of how great they are. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I guess I started to naturally dislike some of them, it's like it's amplified. It's way worse than really like it probably really is because of the buildup.
It was an overhype going on.
It's like, oh, he's amazing on the mic. And then he comes over here. He's like, I'm like, all right, dude.
To be fair, indie fans, independent wrestling fans, 99 times out of 100 usually overhype whoever the fuck it is that they like. Because
that's fine.
And I've explained this to people, and they always feel some type of way, and I personally don't give a shit. That's why I say it anyway. But indie fans over-romanticize independent wrestlers because independent wrestlers is somebody a little bit more in their league. I have access to this guy. He added me on social media. He talks to me after the show. I feel a connection with that person. So you become a bigger fan than you realize. You're not really a fan of the work the way that you think. You're a fan of that individual. So when that individual gets a look or a light or an opportunity, you get really happy. Like, for instance, I worked a couple of times on a couple of shows. Got a chance to have a conversation. I got pictures with him. Ricochet. Right? Ricochet was all the hype. He was all of the talk, all the scuttlebutt. This guy was an amazing athlete. He can do such amazing things. And I remember specifically being at a House of Glory show when somebody asked me, he's like, man, how long do you think before WWE scoops him up? And I just started laughing. And they were like, what are you laughing about? They're not touching him. That flip shit that you like, it's like the only thing he does. He can't do anything else. He can't talk. He can't slow down. He can't do any of that shit. And I'm not saying that that's bad for him. He's making money and making towns doing what he's doing. But the WWE is a completely different fucking animal. And he's going to have to do this and he's going to have to do that. And I got shit on for that. They were like, are you kidding me? He's gonna do this. He's going to do that. He gets to WWE and they bury him fucking immediately. I know people are going to look at his NXT run and go, well, he did some NXT stuff and NXT got everybody over. That's not the real fucking place. It's the WWE main roster. And nothing, because they found out very quickly he's very limited. As athletic as he is, he's limited in literally every other aspect. He doesn't even, at the time, wasn't even comfortable using that athleticism in the way that they need it. It's like, I don't need 630. I don't need shooting star on the floor. I don't. Can you throw a punch? Can you drop kick this dude and not kill yourself? And that's the role and the things that you need to do. So whenever these independent stars move on to these bigger stages, I'll never forget this for as long as I live. I think it was Arn Anderson. It was one of those. It was either Arn Anderson or Terry Taylor, one of these guys. They were talking about their difficulties with Seth Rollins when he came to WWE originally. Because his ring name before was Tyler Black, and he assumed, because he was the Ring of Honor world champion at the time of negotiation, that he's traveling the world, he's a world champion, he's going to skate right into the main roster. And they sent his ass to developmental, and he couldn't figure it out. And he went to the developmental, and apparently he had a shitty attitude. And this is Seth Rollins talking about, Mr. Company Guy. When he came in, he had a really shitty attitude.
It's an ego check.
He felt like he was better than everybody else. He was like, I've done so much more than everyone here. Why am I here? And the way that they described it to him is that, you know, you are very good at what you do, okay? You are very fluent in French, okay? Very fluent. You've been speaking it your whole life. Now that you're here, we need you to speak English, okay? It's a language, same as the other, but there's some differences, and that's what we do here. And I don't mean a little French-English combination. No, you need to speak English here. All right, your French needs to stay at Ring of Honor, and you need to come in here and learn this system now.
Was Roman in developmental as well?
He was. Okay. He was he was there same time as Seth and same time.
That's what
as
I would
Ambrose.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny when they got called up. They did a triple threat match against each other in developmental, leading up to the Shield debut. It was hilarious. But that was the reason why I think to this day they always looked at Roman as the guy, and they never looked at Dean, and they never looked at Seth as the guy, because they were indie stars. And whenever you're an indie star, you're at more of a – you're behind the eight ball farther than someone with no experience.
Because, but did Roman bitch?
Huh?
Did Roman bitch?
Roman never
did. Did he just do his time?
He just did his time.
And that's there. It is.
And
that's it.
But that's what I'm trying to explain.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
He
didn't
come in with this excess resume of this is what's worked for me. This is how I do things. He was a clean slate, and just said, "Hey, what do I have to do to succeed here?" And they said, "Do X, Y, Z." So he did X, Y, Z. No complaints. He just did it. Whereas Seth and Dean both came in and were like, "Well, this is what I do. This is how I do it." And they're like, "You don't do that shit anymore. This
was
is what
Gunther
you do
in
now."
Developmental?
Gunther went, technically speaking, when he debuted with WWE, it was with NXT UK. So that was the developmental of developmental.
I would say yes. Then.
That was
I
like,
would say yes.
Yeah, it'd be like double A ball compared to like triple A ball. Yeah, he went from NXT UK, then he went to NXT, and then
which is even more developmental.
Yeah, and then he went to the main roster.
Which is and I asked this question specifically because you brought up a really awesome fucking point that your biggest people right now going into one of the biggest WrestleManias all had to do it.
They all did it, yeah.
Everyone had to do it.
Only one guy didn't do it, and that was AJ Styles. And the only reason, and I've said
but
this.
But he was ahead of the crew, like
but he
before
wasn't just,
that wave.
Yeah, but he was also older.
Was NXT even that? If NXT was even around, I don't think NXT was NXT.
When AJ came?
Yes.
No, it was. This was Kevin Owens, Finn Balor, Sami Zayn. This was a loaded. This was the black and gold. They were loaded. But they didn't.
Then explain the AJ Styles then.
Because I just said, I think it was because of his age. He came in at like 40. So it's
they
like
wanted to get what they could out of
him. They wanted to make sure they maximized their money.
But AJ went and he's still going.
And AJ won the title in his first year. They said, we're going to make
not
him a main
event. Everybody can be Kobe, you know what I'm saying? Everybody can be LeBron.
It is what it is. He was a special breed. But AJ also, I mean, with age comes wisdom, and with age and wisdom comes a much more. A willingness to bend backwards. So when AJ came, yes, he was older, and yes, they wanted to maximize his money, but he made it easy for them to like him and to use him because he did everything. He wrestled everybody they told him to wrestle. The biggest, we want to talk about the day that AJ Styles won over Vince McMahon. They had split rosters and there was one show, it was a pay-per-view, I think it was No Mercy, and I think it was in Chicago or something like that, somewhere in the Midwest. And AJ was with the half of the crew that went to Australia. So they did a show in Australia, and they had a pay-per-view the next day, but the Australia crew was supposed to go to another city. It was weird. I forgot how it was figured out, but Finn Balor was supposed to be the demon, and he was supposed to wrestle I forgot who. And that person couldn't make it. So they were like, well, we need a replacement that the fans are going to enjoy, and we can't just put anybody in that spot. And AJ said, I can do it. And they said, okay, but you're in Australia. And he was like, yeah, well, the flight's supposed to leave tomorrow. Is there any way you can get me a flight back today? And they said, well, what we can do is that we can get the plane over there. And so he flew into Australia from the States, which is how many fucking hours? Had the match, got back into a plane almost immediately after to fly to Chicago to wrestle Finn Balor. And this is all happening in 2 or 3 days. Mm. And he did that to bail Vince out. And Vince told him, I'll never forget this. Thank you. And he's been made man ever since. But there's a lot of times where you have that resume. And I, to a degree, I understand that. When you're on the independent scene, you work hard to gain the momentum that you gain, to gain the following that you have, to have the success that you have. And there's a lot of trial and error to figure out what works for you on that level. When you get signed by the big company, the assumption is made that you like what you saw me do. Mm-hmm. I'd like to do that for you. And they go, no, we saw a person who has the potential to do what we need, not what you do. What you do is nice, and you're very talented at what you do, but we see the kind of talent that would mold better into what we're trying to do. When they hired El Generico, and everyone was like, oh, I can't wait, and then he came out with no mask on, and he was just Sami Zayn. And people said, what the fuck? And he became this huge, monstrous success to the point where he was just asked recently, you know, if you were to ever leave WWE and go back to doing whatever you were doing before, would you ever do Generico again? He was like, no. Because Generico was something that I had a lot of fun with, but it didn't generate this kind of attention and this kind of financial success. And Sami Zayn is what works. This character
Sami Zayn
is what,
over as fuck.
Yeah, it's worth. It's what
There's
works.
No going back.
There's no.
It
going
would be
back
cool for that. A nice little nostalgic like intro.
I'm sure he wouldn't rule out doing an appearance or two just for the pop, but that's not going to be his full time life again.
And, oh God, no.
No, and you know that's what that is. The independent
scene. But that's
scene
what it's supposed to be. It's an evolution.
Right. The independent scene is where you go through your trial and error and you get your experience for the real thing. This is not the real thing. And I wish more people. I'm an independent performer and I have that mentality. And I wish more people had that mentality because I don't know how many people I run into at these shows. They think they've made it, that this is it for them. The 50 bucks and the 40 people in the audience, that I'm a success. It's like, bro, no.
Anytime someone gives, especially for all the indie, I mean, I know you give, I know you give very tough love to a lot of people in the industry because it's very important to you. But for someone on the outside, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but from someone on the outside, it's very like commendable to just be like, you know, I made $20 off of that show, right? And
right.
people are like, what the fuck is 20 bucks? That's not even going to fill your gas tank, right?
Exactly.
But it's like the idea of this, that you can't get this package that I'm selling anywhere else. It comes exclusively from me. So to have someone, even it doesn't matter how trash you are, to have someone go, all right, I need someone for this match. I mean, you got something going on here. I'm going to give you 20 bucks. Can you work this match for me? Like, as someone who developed that, even the corniest gimmick, getting that transaction, you're right. That shit does feel like, oh shit! Like, I'm doing this. I'm a pro wrestler.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Whenever I go to a school, whenever I go to a wrestling school, I always tell, especially the new people. Like, I ran into a guy the other day. He had just started training the week before. He's been training for a week. And I was like, and he was asking me questions. I was like, I can't answer any of your questions until I can see what you can do. So I didn't mess with him or nothing. I stayed for the – they had an open gym and I was training. This was – as a matter of fact, this was the day that you guys came over. I was in the Bronx, remember?
Mm-hmm.
So I just let him do his thing, and they were doing the training stuff, and they were having him do the rolls and the bumps and the running ropes and all sorts of stuff, and he looked pretty decent. He looked like he was okay, safe enough. I got in there and did some things with him, and he was good. He listened and all this different stuff, and, you know, it was a casual day, and he looked at me right before I left, and he goes, man, I want to do a lot with this. Like, you know, how do I get there? You know, he's pointing to the TV. Like, how do I get there? How do I? And I said, there's only two ways to go with a wrestling career. You can do it as a hobby, and you can make whatever money you want from it, and just concentrate solely on the fun part of wrestling, which is coming up with the matches, having the front, you know, doing cool shit in front of the audiences or whatever.
Yeah. Being okay where you land.
You're like water, man. You're fluid. You're just doing whatever, right?
Yeah.
There's the other way, and you were just asking me, how do I get there? And that's the second way is the way to get there, and that's to be absolutely obsessed with this.
Yeah,
there's
hard.
Nothing
you
else but this.
Right.
You're training every day. You're studying every day. You're talking to as many veterans as you possibly can. You're learning as fast as you can. Because the faster you learn this, the better a chance you have at success. Because the older you get, the harder it is to get to where you're going. It's hard. Mm-hmm. You want to do it as young as possible before your bump card gets all filled up.
How old was he?
I asked him. He was 25.
Well, that's not bad.
And I said, that's not terrible. You got a few years
right now. Not terrible, but he's got to go hard.
You got to go hard right now. And hopefully within the next 5 years before you hit 30, you've gained enough experience to at least feel confident enough to where you're going to be put in positions that you're unfamiliar with or you don't know who this individual is, but you're confident enough in your ability where you can at least get by without getting injured or injuring him, and you'll worry about the entertainment factor after the fact. I don't know which way he's going to go. But I tell that to everybody. I said, you can either do this for the hell of it or you can do it for real. The people who are going to make money are the people who are doing it for real. The people who are going to have the – this is the thing. it's a trade-off. If you do the hobby one, you're doing it for fun. Enjoy yourself. If you're doing it for real, you're doing it for money, there's not going to be a lot of fun. Right? So it's like there's a trade-off there. You'll have for those of you who are going hard, the fun comes when the hard work turns into financial success. Then it becomes fun. When you get the when that bank hits and that check clears and you're making the six figures to take these bumps, it becomes fun. You know, when you guys go
or at minimum worth it.
Yeah, when you go to the WWE and you see like the show is over and you see the wrestlers just having a good time with the audience, talking to them, dancing a little bit. It looks like a lot of fun. That's that's the dogs over here barking. They're having fun, but you know what? They're getting paid to have a lot of fun, okay?
And they went through a lot of not fun.
They went through a lot of not so fun. Torn this, broken that, training at 5 in the morning.
Long road trips.
All always in the car.
Wrestling for free.
Yeah, different hotel rooms, meeting up with different people. Not every promoter is looking out for your best interest. Not every wrestler is there to try to help you, quote-unquote, get over. Mm-hmm. There's a laundry list of shit that you've got to mind yourself through to get to this. And I think now is the best time to, A, get us back on track, and, B, segue into what I feel is the most important part of today's podcast. And I'm skipping the rest of the stuff. We'll get into that at the round table. I'm going right to the WrestleMania means to me thing because – I've explained this in previous shows, and I will once again explain this to the new audience, for those of you who haven't been around for a while. I'm going to give you a specific conversation to encapsulate the importance of this specific show, and I think you've heard this before. I was working a show at a Six Flags in New Jersey. I think it's in Jackson, New Jersey. And I was working a show there. It was with Jersey Championship Wrestling, which was the company before they became Game Changer. I worked with them when they were Jersey Championship Wrestling. We did a big event. It was a summer event. I don't know why I keep going back to Asbury. But it was at Six Flags. One of the greatest days of my life because I got to call the show with two of my best friends. I had some really good friends that were on the card. EYFBO was in the main event at Six Flags. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got my friends with me. We chilling. Some of them are going on rides. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a fun day. And this particular show had mad names. Mick Foley was on there. Ted DiBiase, X-Pac, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. I mean, the legends were there, right? So, you know me. Everybody out there knows me. I'm not a quiet, shy guy. I start talking to everybody because I want to pick everybody's brain and just bullshit around and have fun, right? That was also the first night I met Tama Tonga, who just got signed to WWE, by the way. I'll never forget this for as long as I live, because one of the most fascinating things I wanted to talk about them was about WrestleMania. And I remember asking Mick, because we all know a lot about Mick's story, about him living in Long Island and hitchhiking to the Garden to watch Jimmy Snuka perform, and he's had so many WWE memories himself. And I told him, I said, can you explain to me in as short a term as you possibly can? Because I'm looking for a way to describe it to other people. What does WrestleMania mean to you as a performer? And this guy main evented WrestleMania, okay? This is no slouch. This is Mick Foley. He thought about it for a minute. He goes, that's a really good question. I'll put it in as short a term as I could possibly put it. He thought about it and he goes, it's like spending your whole life, 30, 35 years of your life, every moment, every early morning, every late night, every trial, every tribulation, every funeral, every wedding, every birthday. It's spending 30 or 35 years of all of that and cashing it in for just 15 minutes in front of a camera on one event. Just 15 minutes. 30 or 35 years of your life cashed in. I'm going to put it all in there. Just give me 15 minutes on this show. And that's what it means to us to perform on that event. Because you get it. If you get it that one time, it's not guaranteed you'll ever get it again.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, there he goes. He told me, he goes, there's been a few who have been lucky, right? Like, how many Triple H go to? How many did Kane go to? How many, like, there's those? He goes, but then there's, you know, how many did Melina go to? That was the example he brought up. You know, he's like, because him and Melina were friends. He's like, how many did she go to? How many did, you know, this person? He goes, when we had Nathan Jones come in, you know, he was the big Australian, the big muscle guy. He's learning under The Undertaker. You think he's got a long career ahead of him. He went to one, and that was it. We never saw him again. And it's like that event is cementing your career. It was every sacrifice I ever made. It was every moment I ever fell down and it was in the dumps and hit my rock bottom. It was that moment when you go through the curtain at WrestleMania. That's the moment where it all goes. You go, okay, it wasn't for nothing. I did it. I'm here. You know what I'm saying? It's a culmination of a lot of things. And to put it into perspective for, say, the drawing card, because it's cool to be on the show, but you could be a member of a battle royal, right? You're not really influencing the show in any way. But, like, for instance, Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is a human being. He's not a god. He doesn't have superpowers or super abilities. He's just a dude with a cool glove and a catchy little catchphrase. That's it. And I remember that same day, Ted DiBiase, he came to me. He goes, you have to understand the power of a draw and why that individual is always going to be worth more than they actually get. Because you have to think about how many, for instance, next week we're going to be at WrestleMania 40. How many employees do you think will be in the building for WrestleMania 40? What? Well, thousands, we would think, right? Ticket takers, concessions, the custodial staff, the people who actually work for WWE. So your ring crew, your staging crew, your audio crew, the truck drivers, the unloaders, the everything. They all have a job next weekend. Because Roman Reigns says, acknowledge me in the ring. That's the power of a draw. Because this individual has become such an asset on a business side of things that they're able to sell out 80,000 people in a stadium to come see him.
He's creating jobs.
And that, I'm picking Roman Reigns at the moment because he's the current guy, but Stone Cold,
yeah.
Bret Hart, Hulk Hogan, the list goes down the line for WrestleManias. Where they've sold out the Pontiac Silverdome, Hulk Hogan, a man who's wearing yellow spandex and a ripped-up T-shirt as a headband to the corniest theme song of all time, was all magic. When he stepped in the room, 93,000 people blew what should have been a roofless building to begin with. They just blew it open. There is something to the magic about this particular event that every single year it just gets bigger and bigger. Now, it's sad to some degree that this will be the first WrestleMania, and it's 40 of all WrestleManias. This will be the first WrestleMania where there is not a single McMahon at all involved in the process of this particular WrestleMania. That might not be a bad thing, because as you said when we started this, this is probably one of the most hyped you've been for Mania in a long time. And it's not just because you're going. I think, is it fair? Should I ask you that? Would you be as hyped for this event if you weren't physically going on Saturday?
Bro, I keep forgetting I'm going until people tell me. I swear to God, I'm not even like trying to be funny.
That's
like,
true.
You remind me all the time. My boy's like, dude, you're going to be there for that. I'm like, oh shit, yeah! Like that type of shit. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
My brain's not even, it's, I don't know why.
Right.
But my brain's not even in that. Like, I keep forgetting it's next weekend.
Yes, next week, 7 days.
Like, my brain isn't there. So when it comes to wrestling right now, it's just the content at the moment. Like, I'm not going to really feel it till we're, like, there. And I'm like, right. Oh, shit, I'm here. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That's where I'm at with it right now.
Right. So you know the story better than most, but for people out there who are unaware, when we were younger, we had our ups, we had our downs. We had situations where we lived in places we probably didn't want to live, and then when there were places that we were happy where we were. The common denominator from my life, from pretty much, let me see, 85, 86, 87, 88, the year you were born, which was WrestleMania 4. That was the first memory I have of watching wrestling. Because do you remember Grandpa Clark?
Yeah.
Okay. So technically he was my great-grandpa. He watched WrestleMania 4. He was a wrestling guy. As a matter of fact, his favorite wrestler, he was ahead of the curve, was a heel. It was Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase. He loved the goofy laugh, and he loved when he used to fuck with the fans, like when he kicked the basketball away from the kid. And he loved that shit. He would go nuts for Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase. But that was the year that Randy Savage, the Macho Man, won the title, and I watched it every year after that. And it was on and off for me because wrestling wasn't really on TV a lot like that. And then we moved into an apartment in Connecticut. I think it was West Hartford. And that's the year they started Monday Night Raws. And even then, kind of, I'm watching, but I'm not religious just yet. And then we hit like the early stages right there of the Attitude Era. We're getting there, 96, 97-ish. And now it's just becoming, this is an everyday thing for me now. And I got
it's an obsession. No. It's an you could use the word. It was an obsession.
I had tapes. My wife thinks I have Asperger's because of the wrestling obsession. But like we had, I'm not joking. She wants me to get tested and everything. But we had tapes upon tapes upon tapes of Raws and SmackDowns and pay-per-views, and they're labeled and they're in order and all this different stuff. And we would get the pay-per-views. Even if we didn't have cable, we'd go visit family to go order it on their paper, on their cable box or whatever the case may be. And we made it work every single time. And no matter what happened, I always had my wrestling, and every year, same thing, WrestleMania get together, every year from, I want to say, confidently, like my first WrestleMania was 4, and I've seen every WrestleMania, but I think officially like 10 and on, I always say, that was the one at the Garden, 10, that was the one where Mom watched it with me, and then 11 was in Hartford. And we lived in Connecticut at the time, so for whatever reason, we got the pay-per-view for free that year. So that was even better. My mom was like, oh, I ain't got to pay for shit? Cool, let's watch it. And then every year after that, 12, 13, 14, now we're getting into the late 90s, early 2000s. We're watching every year. I remember Mom got us tickets to a house show when I was younger, and that kind of started the whole going to events thing. We eventually went to a pay-per-view within your house. Bottom line of the whole thing is that this is always
we went to DX too, didn't we?
In your house, DX, Springfield, December 7th, 1997. Shawn Michaels against Ken Shamrock, and some.
Yeah, it's the first time I ever saw real life boobies.
Oh yeah, boobies.
I had to go. They gotta be boobies at that age. Yeah, that's the first time I saw skin.
I'm at an age now.
I actually saw titties.
I'm at an age now where they're back to boobies. I guess that'd be fair. That'd be fair for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it's playful. You know?
Playful and boobies. Back to my sad story. So, we were living with wrestling in our lives this absolute whole time. So the reason why I wanted to bring this topic back up is because I wanted to illustrate how important this event is every year to me personally, and not just to me, but throughout my whole family. I was fortunate enough to meet a woman who would become my wife, who I wouldn't say she loves us as much, because what human...
Tolerates it.
Yeah. Well, not tolerate. She's a fan. She's a genuine
fan.
She
tolerates it.
No,
she sees... I wouldn't
sees
say
this,
she's a fan.
She watches that shit when I'm not around.
She's a... Okay, well, then that's fair.
Yeah, she watches this shit when I'm not around. She has Facebook pages, and she'll send me information. Like I told you, when she pitches shit for the show... That's how she pitches it. She sends me shit in text messages. You should talk about
this.
To be fair,
I'm used to your fandom. So yes. For her to be a little bit more passive to me, like, for me, when it comes to wrestling fan, it means something different from what I watched. You know what I mean? Right. So I guess that's a little unfair to her. All right, yeah. Fair enough.
So she gets into it, and that's where I think that it's most fortunate for me. The part that she tolerates is me doing it. That's the part that she tolerates, because that's me out of the house. Off fair. On the road doing shit and going to Maryland and going to Jersey and PA and all kinds of – we're going to Connecticut in about 2 or 3 weeks. Actually, we got a jam-packed schedule. I got Connecticut coming. I got Maryland, and then I got a show in May that's going to be in Queens, in New York. So I have to go. I don't have to go far. If anything, I don't even think I'm driving to that bitch. I'll just take a train. Fuck it. But this is a big event for me every single year, and I wanted to bring that up to illustrate that point. But I also now want to expand on it and add the newest chapter, and that's next week. Because next week is probably, no, not probably. I think it's going to be the biggest event of my life, because this is the first time where the family that I brought this wrestling thing to for all these years will now be enjoying the big event in person. You're going, my sisters are going, my wife is going, my son is going, my mother is going. Which was another thing, because WrestleMania 10 was at the Garden, and I remember her telling me then, which was 1994, and she was telling me then, she goes, man, if they ever do the Garden again, we should go back, which they did in 10 years after the fact, WrestleMania 20, but I was on my own at that point. We couldn't do that, but she used to always say, you know, one time, one year, whatever, you know, we're going to go, and she said that 30 years ago, WrestleMania 10, WrestleMania 11, when it was in Hartford, we almost went to that. Just the financials didn't work out. There was always possibilities. When they did 15 in Philly, we got really close. That was 99 because we were in Jersey. Mm-hmm. So, again, close, but it was always a financial thing. Well, next week, it happens.
Next week,
it happens. Everyone's going to be there in the house. Phenomenal seats. Steph just looked up the Ticketmaster seats the other day. We are in phenomenal seats. This is going to be just an amazing fucking day. And so we have the roundtable coming up on Thursday, where we're going to have a lot of fun talking about match specifics. We're going over WrestleMania 40. By then, we should have an idea of what match is going to be on what card, so that'll be much easier to digest and to break it down and really get you guys hyped, which is the whole point. Listen, when we do the roundtables, we're not analysts. This isn't Stephen A. Smith and First Take, right? We're having fun with these matches, and we're here to get you just as hyped as we're going to be hyped. That's all that it is. So if you want to talk wrestling, you want to have fun, you want to interact with us, ask us the questions on the air in real time, or even if it's not questions, if you just want to make comments, you want to chime in, share your opinions. We've had that in the past when people are like, oh, no, it's got to be this person who wins. And then I block them immediately because they're stupid. But it doesn't have to be you. You can be smart and join us on April 4th, Thursday, 8 o'clock on all kinds of social media. But the primary spot, obviously, would be Facebook. We're going to be live. Me, Deceive Dave, maybe more than two people. I have my eyes on some people that I want to kind of mix things up. So it's going to be a great time. We were predominantly WrestleMania today, but we broke off into some other stuff today, and that's fine. We had a cool conversation. I really enjoyed it. So we'll see you guys again next week, Thursday, live, 8 p.m., for the WrestleMania 40 Roundtable. It's going to be a blast. Keep your ear out for the independent spotlight as well. I have some more interviews that I have lined up that we're going to be doing. So we're off and running. These projects are going. We're making some noise. We're making some changes here. We're going to see what's up. We're going to see what's going down. So anything else you want to add before we go and get out of here?
No, I got my shit off today. I'm good.
Fuck nice. CM Punk. That's where that's yeah.
That. Fuck. See, that should be the title of this. Fuck CM Punk. You better. You're supposed to be a fucking veteran. You're giving me this trash. Fuck out of here.
So if you hear his music on Saturday, you're going to boo him.
Oh, I'm going to pop because it's a good ass song.
That's a dope song. Yeah. That sounds
system. I would be excited to. Let me rephrase that, because dudes be really be like, oh. I would be excited to hear the song. It's a good song. I enjoy it, but I'd care less of the character.
The man himself. There you go.
Yeah, right. I'm good. I'm cool. Good on him.
All right, then. So, for those of you out there listening to the show, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for sharing. And, of course, thank you guys so much for enjoying. We will absolutely – we're jacked. We're geeked. We're ready to go next week. It is WrestleMania weekend. After this, folks, we're going to give wrestling a big, strong break because it's been all wrestling for like the last month and a half. But it's WrestleMania season, so what you going to do? After WrestleMania, we're going to cool it out with the wrestling a little bit, and we'll
talk about big stuff as they happen.
I want to mix it up. I know what the top – that was one of the things we talked about when we brought it back, is that we would mix some things up. So I definitely want to – you know, I know we've been going hard because of WrestleMania, but once WrestleMania is in the can and – I do want to break down some of the stuff that happened at WrestleMania with you, get your opinions on that.
Absolutely. That's what I said. We'll dabble. Yeah, we'll dabble. Anything important happens.
Yeah, and then we're off to the races. Might have to talk about some new champions. Who knows? So thank you guys for listening, and enjoy. We'll see you next week.
Mic drop. Wait a minute. This is too much. Cooking it like a pro. Wrap it up, everybody. Show's over.